Welcome back to the Extension Experience Podcast. I'm Dana Zook. This week, we are bringing in the cattle markets. We're going to discuss cattle economics, and I have invited our Northeast Area Extension Ag Economist, Scott Clausen, to join me in the discussion. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Scott, this is your first girl around on the podcast. How is that possible?
Is it too many good people to get on?
I don't know. So since it's your first time, can you give listeners some information about yourself and how you came to the area specialist team? Because I feel that's what we should call ourselves now. We're all us area specialists. I know we're like the invisible people behind the scenes, but hey, how'd you come to be here?
Yeah. Absolutely. So to keep it a little brief, so I grew up in El Reno, Oklahoma, kind of typical family operation for the area, some wheat, some cows, some yearlings, all that kind of stuff. Got into the livestock world a little bit. And so I ended up going to Connors out of high school and then went to Oklahoma State and went back and coached a livestock judging team at Connors for a few years after that. And went back to grad school at Arkansas, so finished up the grad work in Ag Econ after that, and then joined the world of banking, which is actually what I was planning on doing when I went back to grad school. So did that for about 5 years, and then you talk about being behind the scenes. I really had no earthly idea that there were area specialists and things like that. Like, that was totally foreign to me. And actually, my brother-in-law had been a county educator and had mentioned before that there were area specialists. And he always kind of said, like, I think that's a pretty cool job. And there's an Ag Econ one out there, just kind of out of nowhere. Somehow I saw that there was an opening for Ag Econ in Northeast Oklahoma and applied. And the rest is kind of history. So, got a pretty diverse background, I guess. I like to say I'm not really a natural ag economist. Like, that was not, I was more animal science and things like that. Got interested in the Ag Econ deal actually after college and pursued it past that. And so, I think it gives me, I don't know, I'd like to think a unique view on things. I don't know, maybe it's not as unique as I think it is. So
it is. That gives you a great perspective. I think that's probably why you are good at what you do, is because we have lots of different perspectives. I'm kind of like a animal science area livestock specialist with a horticulture background.
Right.
Kind of weird. Scott, let's dive right in and set the stage. All right. From a livestock market standpoint, Correct me if I'm wrong, but part of what is going on with the cattle markets right now is due to the big idea of supply. So can you give us kind of a summary of what's going on with the U.S. beef supply?
Yeah. So huge, I say huge, but kind of at decades low supply points in terms of the beef cow herd. That is kind of hanging out in the background. And it is primarily, in my opinion, responsible for our good prices. And so I know we'll get into some things that are maybe concerning in the markets and things like that. But I think it's just perspective wise, we've always got to keep reminding ourselves through these periods that prices are really good historically. We always want more and we always want it to be better, but historically they're very good. And the primary driver for that is from 2014, when we started our current cattle cycle, to now, we've lived through the kind of expansion of the cow herd. We've contracted and liquidated that cow herd back down through, market incentives, through drought, et cetera, that kind of forces our hand through that period. And we're back at this point where we have a cow herd that's at its lowest point in many decades. We're kind of managing our way through that to see where that goes. And that's kind of where we sit today.
Historically, if I'm thinking about since 2014, essentially 10 years, is that the typical length of a cattle cycle?
Yeah. So, they vary, but I think we always kind of look at 10 years as kind of average, right? Sometimes it's 8, sometimes it's 12. But about 10 years is what it takes for us to run all the way through this cycle without thing kind of derailing this normal cycle. Drought, crazy economic conditions, things like that always push the cycle one way or another.
Let's talk about prices. So you think that the cattle cycle is a major driver of the current price situation. Let's just give a baseline for the price situation, and then you can kind of explain what do you think.
So over the last 6 months, we've, I don't know if it's every class specifically, but for the majority of classes of livestock, from calves all the way through the feedlot. We've set record prices through that period. It hasn't been, just a rocket to outer space the whole time. It goes up, it goes down. We've got little setbacks along the way, but for the most part, that's created really good markets as a whole. But again, that's not always every day. Always, it's climbing. We've got setbacks kind of along the way. So yeah, prices in terms of all classes have been fairly strong, with some kind of setbacks, like I said.
I looked at the 5 market average. It looked like I'm just picking a point, listeners and Scott. I'm just picking a point. 600-pound number one steers are 285 to 325. Is that kind of what we've
Absolutely.
been seeing? And that's through all the crazy things that have happened in the past couple weeks.
So over the past several months, the cash market, especially on, kind of these classes of cattle that we deal with, right? Calves, yearlings, things like that. The cash market has generally outperformed what the futures board is doing. That's certainly been a good thing. We've had pretty decent conditions on the ground. For the most part, we've recovered from drought and are kind of establishing forage bases back and things like that. But yeah, so if we look at calves through yearlings, they're still pretty strong right now. The past couple of weeks has been rough, but just pulling up markets as the morning we record this, things are kind of bouncing back the right direction. So yeah, so those 5 weight calves, establishing kind of prices over $3 and then kind of staggers down a little bit as we go along. I think one of the important things to keep in mind is just the seasonal moves of those markets are different. We should see strong calf prices in the spring if everything goes to normal. And then that market kind of deteriorates some through the summer and into the fall, where we kind of flood that market with spring-born calves. And it kind of is the opposite on those bigger cattle. Strengthen as we go deeper into the year, and then it kind of tails off and we recover some there. So
A majority of our cow calf herds are spring calving, and so that drives that cycle a little bit. But
yeah, you bet.
we've seen higher than normal prices right now. And of course, people are like, "Well, I wish they were higher. I wish they
Yeah,
were
yeah.
always wishing they were higher." It's a psychology thing,
That's
right,
right.
Scott?
So I think it's pretty funny that you mentioned that, because if in all the cattlemen's meetings and events that I go speak to producers at, talking about $3 weaned calves doesn't get much of a rise out of people. Back in 14, we were really giddy about it, and now it's like, well, that's all right, which is very understandable, right? Because costs are in a significantly different position than they were then. But what does get producers fired up, it seems, is they really like to talk about what they got for their cull cows over the past few months and year. Like, that market has just been on fire. And so at least that seems to be the one that they get fairly excited about. So
Well, tell us a little bit about that. Let's talk about cull cows, because that's a really important part of paying off your cow over her lifetime. And so her cull price, we don't want her to be a bag of bones to die out in the pasture, okay? We want to get some value out of her.
So absolutely. So that is, I guess, probably kind of two different issues there. They're both probably worth talking about. The first part of that is that cull cow prices are really high. As we look at kind of what's happening on the beef side and not the cow side, the value of those, that kind of 90% market, which is kind of where our cull cows tend to go, and that ground beef production has been really, really strong. And if you look at where we're at, coming out of a drought, we culled a bunch of cows over the past couple of years. That does limit supply of those cull cows to some degree. And that market has responded kind of in turn. So, just from a beef perspective, those cull cows are really providing what's strong in the market right now. And the market's kind of asking for more of them, which is kind of detrimental to that supply issue in the long run, right? So we can't be turning all those cows into ground beef. So from a beef perspective is one thing. But the other thing that you mentioned, I think, is really interesting, is that the math, if we look at retaining a heifer or buying a bred heifer, most people, we consider, the calf price, et cetera, as the really primary points of how long is that cow going to make it, how good are the calf markets, and those are all very important. But the one piece of that that usually gets a little lost in the math is, that cow contributes the most cash back to you in her last year, not in those early years, right? So the year that she sells a calf and we sell her, we actually get the biggest recovery of our cash in that investment, usually in a single year. So you're right. Like what happens in that cow-calf market is vastly important. We usually think of most cow-calf operations getting 10 to 20% of their annual revenue from cull cows, and yet we don't pay a whole bunch of attention and management in that area typically.
That's really interesting, Scott. We should probably do a whole podcast on that. That's very interesting.
Yeah,
I think
I
that's really
really
cool.
like that one. Yeah.
We've had a pretty crazy couple 5 years. Can we say that? I mean, COVID, terrible
Yeah.
drought. It's been crazy. Or maybe that's just normal. I'm not sure.
I sure hope not.
Yeah, I hope not. How has demand changed during that time?
Yeah, that is a great question, and there's a lot of really kind of good news on that front. I mean, if we think kind of go back a little bit historically, out of kind of 14 and then to COVID, et cetera, we really asked consumers to really step up their commitment to what they're willing to pay for beef. And they responded in kind. I mean, they've kind of gone with us on this journey of changing kind of price levels. And that has been a great benefit to beef producers. So beef demand has been really good and sustained through those high prices. I think that it's one of those things that we're kind of getting to an area on that front where we're kind of entering some uncharted territory, right? We haven't pushed prices at the kind of wholesale level much higher than this for a sustained period. Like we hit them during COVID when there are supply chain issues, but we haven't ever elevated much further past this point and then asked to stay in that price level. And so I think that's what we're going to find out here pretty soon is what how produce or how consumers are going to respond to that ask. I don't know how far you want to dive in, but there are some things that we're going to find out here in the next 30 to 60 to 90 days about where we sit in 2024 from a demand standpoint. One of the things that is sitting out there is if we keep an eye on what's happening with choice boxed beef. That's not retail. That's not even, maybe wholly representative one calf, but it gives us a good idea of values, et cetera. And we're at a point where we're entering the summer and the spring. It's time to fire up grills. It's time for that metric, that choice boxed beef cutout, to make a move. And it normally does, and that's why the seasonal price pattern has it, higher through May and June. But we're kind of waiting for that to happen. And that's one of the things we're going to find out here over the next couple of months is that, can we kind of push that higher and kind of allow prices to maybe make another improvement in terms of calf and yearling and slaughter prices.
We're moving into a time where that ground beef is really going to be utilized, right? I
Yeah.
use ground beef all the time, Scott. My kids like ground beef better than other things, but
Yes.
I think most people kind of tend to use, more ground beef in the summertime. You had mentioned in a meeting that we kind of did recently that ground beef has stayed at like $5 a pound or around that time on the in the retail case. And so that increase is really going to show us whether people are willing to
Yes.
pay $6, $7, $8 for ground beef, right?
Sure. I mean, and that is, like you said, I eat a bunch of ground beef too at our house, and it's kind of the staple beef product, right? It's easy, it's storable, all those types of things come into play. So yeah, that is really a cornerstone. And through all of this, I guess maybe one thing I do bring to the household is that I try to do a lot of grocery shopping because just I think it gives me some help for my job too, right? And so I'll hit the grocery store and just kind of, meander around and look at prices, and it's pretty well just been $5 for a while. While we are seeing some really high kind of retail prices, that point, I guess, on the map has stayed, within reason. We haven't seen anything big. And as the summer rolls around, I think we're going to continue to see some questions about what happens between the ground beef and the steaks and things like that. Because in that cutout value right now, it's not the middle meats that are really driving price. While the price hasn't gotten much over $3 for a long period of time here recently, the price has been supported by end meats, which are not the ones that, you know, we see as our big value drivers, right? That's not the steaks and the ribs and loins, et cetera. You know, I think everybody's, with the way prices have inflated across the board, not just within beef or retail specifically, but inflated across all of goods, kind of wondering, is this a little hint in that consumers may not have the money in their pocket to go with this, you know, I think is the concern on this kind of price change, price level change that we're hoping for.
Okay. Well, as you peruse the grocery store shelves, Scott, on a weekly basis, you just let us know what happens. Okay.
I will.
What other things are going on that's important to this demand pricing perspective?
Yeah. So I think you're referring to the bird flu thing.
Yep. Avian influenza.
Yeah, so that has gotten, I don't know. I guess you would say everybody's kind of antennas up, right? We know the situation on the poultry side of things. And so that's one thing. But obviously the big kind of, I guess, headline grabber has been the occurrences where we've seen it in dairies now. And then that kind of causes a whole ripple of concerns. I know we like to draw a line between beef and dairy, but when she's not a dairy cow anymore, she's beef, right? So
so
the integration of those markets exists, and you know, there's been a lot of concern about that. And so I think one thing that's important to remember, whether it's avian influenza, whether it's a trade dispute or whatever's happening in the world, when we run prices of cattle really high historically, markets are just nervous, and everybody's kind of looking for, you know, what's hiding in the closet, right? So like, is this going to be what disrupts markets and causes problems for prices? Is that going to be the issue? And so we're always hunting, just markets in general, just nervous. And everybody gets a little reactionary when news comes out. And so a lot of times, you know, a producer mentioned to me the other day, I think it might've been your meeting. He was just like, the overreaction just kills me, you know, like, and I'm like, I know, I just, every time something happens, it's the worst case. And then it's like, oh, it wasn't that bad. Right. And so then everything recovers. But that lag has a financial impact on our producers. And so if we're selling cattle during that period or something like that, whether it was real or overestimated the issue, that had a tangible impact on their cash situation. And that is a problem. So yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, the markets have slid the past few weeks because of that. Did see some good news come out last night. It looks like where they started testing ground beef, all those tests came up negative. And I think as of this morning, it looked like the futures were all up pretty significantly so far today. So, you know, maybe that's something a bridge we've crossed, I guess you'd say. You know, maybe that's something we can kind of move on from in terms of how it affects the beef cattle side of things. Let's hope for the best there, because that's been kind of the most recent thing that's caused concern in the markets.
So let's switch gears a little bit and talk to beef producers specifically. Let's discuss, as you would say it, the math of expansion. Can we do that? Can we do that?
Yeah,
let's
absolutely.
Talk about that a little bit, because heifers are so expensive right now. What is this a thing that we can handle? Can beef producers afford to pay $3,500, $4,000 for a bred heifer?
Yeah, man, that is so tough. And I hate to sound like kind of traditional economist, but man, depends. Depends on what you're doing. Depends on what your cash situation is. All those types of things. One thing that I always kind of preface with producers is that there's not really a right or wrong necessarily that we can determine up front, right? We can only make as good a decision as we can based on what we think is going to happen. And then hopefully the situation will move our direction and what happens will be worthwhile. For instance, I would assume that the return of this or kind of these stronger cull cow prices probably put heifers that were kept in maybe 16, 17, 18, probably turned them into a profitable venture, just because they are being able to recover as much on the cull cow as maybe they sacrificed up front to have her. And so, you know, I think that even these kind of recent dynamics probably created kind of good investments that we made back in 17 or 18, maybe. So, I don't think that's too far to reach there. So I again, we don't know exactly what's going to happen, and that is a problem, just from coming up with a definitive right or wrong. What I would say is that producers, if they're interested in keeping heifers now, let's say over the next, I know I said at your meeting several times, like the next 60 to 90 days are going to give us a lot of information about our forage conditions, about beef demand. I really think that these next 2 to 3 months are just going to be significantly revealing in kind of how things shape up for maybe the next, 12 to 18 months. If we get enough forage produced over the summer period and we think we can retain heifers, it's just important to keep in mind that the money that we forfeit for keeping her, what she would have brought had we sold her, that price tag does stick with her through her production time. And if prices are really strong, we're retaining heifers at a point where it's maybe been more expensive than it has been before. The other thing is like if we're going to do that, we're also looking at, I guess, hoping that the market will sustain its position for several years, right? It's going to be a couple of years before we generate any cash. And so while we've got stronger markets, the retention of a heifer means that we're making an investment, but we're also diverting forage from an income producing or a cash producing cow that's in production to the development of that asset. I think that's something that we really need to be kind of aware of as we're making that decision. On the other side of the fence, if we're going to go out and pay what some of these sales have brought in lately for some of these bred heifers, I really think that it's important that we've got to make the most of our markets now. And so what I mean by that is I would be really interested in if I'm going to pay that, I'm going to be trying to secure an LRP policy or something like that as rapidly as I can over her first few years of production. Because what that's going to do is that it is going to increase our cost with that. That is definitely going to happen. But what's going to happen is that if the market does turn at some point, that's at least going to give you one more calf out of that cow that we paid a bunch of money for that's going to sell at a market that's better than what's out there. That may not happen for 2 years. That may not happen for 3 years. I don't know when it's going to happen. But, we follow a cycle and prices go back down. That LRP policy is going to help us get one more calf out of that cow at a really strong price. And then, as we mentioned earlier, I'd be really interested on how I can move that cow out of the herd with some value too. That's going to be important in recovering that big investment up front. So either way is tough. Neither one of them are just easy decisions, but both can be right for the right position. I guess the other thing I would say is that if we're going to make an investment in some of those bred heifers right now, that could create some cash flow problems for the first few years those are in production. Simply because if we start to retain any heifers out of those that we purchased and don't sell kind of fully into the market, especially I think that primarily happens if we're going to finance any portion of that, that can cause some cash flow pinches, especially in the early days, if you just kind of sit down and just pencil out kind of the process a little bit. So not something that couldn't be overcome if we've got another set of cows out there that we can use some of the cash that they generate, but certainly something to be aware of. And Dr. DeVeast and his team have done a lot of work on that over the past few, I guess, 12 to 18 months. So there's good information on that out there in the OSU system.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll put that in the show notes. Scott, this has been a good discussion. We could talk forever on this. Let's just wrap up with some advice from you to listeners and simple ways they can prepare for the future and manage things kind of on their home front. Let's focus on the home front here and be successful with high prices, but also very high costs for their operation.
So I would say one of the most important things going forward, just from a farm finance or farm economic perspective, there's a couple of things that really stick out. The first is we really need to spend some time thinking about how we're going to manage cash. And Dana, in your adulthood, in my adulthood, cash hasn't been worth a whole bunch from an investment perspective, right? Interest rates have been so low for so long that until you get back into the 90s and then back into the 80s, especially, cash had a lot of value. And while we're not at those levels yet, really even close to them, we're finally kind of at an interest rate point where cash has value and as an investment tool and how we're going to use it. So we got to be really kind of aware of how we manage cash. At the producer level, I would say cash management is going to be really important over the next 18, 24 months. One of the reasons for that is that I think one of the concerns we need to be thinking about is how are we going to replace assets on the farm and on the ranch? You know, we'd always think about feed cost, et cetera. But if we look at the cost of all of the things that we use to run the ranch, right? So how do we get things to the cows? How do we bale forage? How do we do all those things? All those things that are kind of lurking in the background have all gone up in price pretty substantially. So when we think about when it's time to replace a feed truck, when it's time to replace a tractor or a baler, whatever it is, with interest rates the way they are, plus what that asset cost, there's kind of a compounding issue happening there that's going to make it harder to replace those assets. And I think that's something we really need to be thinking about kind of in several years in advance. Things always happen, we know that. But if we can think about them in advance a little bit, how we're going to replace those assets when it comes time, I think that'll pay some dividends in the future. And the last thing I would say on that front is understanding your cost of production. I'll do a little shameless plug here. That's something that's been on my radar for the past kind of 18 to 24 months is really helping producers come up with that number and kind of understand what all the ins and outs of it are. And we're planning on doing some programming on it this fall. Keep your antenna tuned to that because we're going to have some opportunities for some looks at how we do that and kind of what it means and how to interpret it for your own operations. So I think that's the big thing. Cash management, how are we going to replace assets, and then understanding kind of where our cost position is on these cows in the future is going to be important.
Really great things to go with. I think they're always good things to think about, even more so now. Thanks so much, Scott, for all your information. Just a really good perspective. Listeners, if you have any questions about this, go to your county extension educator. Scott and I are available. We have several ag economists across the state. And so look us up and look for those classes. I hope you have some of those classes over here in the West, Scott, because we are lacking some ag econ presence out here in the western part of the state. But Scott's always willing to do that. Thanks, Scott, for joining us today.
Yeah, absolutely. I enjoyed it. And like we talked about before, there's always things going on in the markets, but generally speaking, they're in pretty good shape. So let's not lose sight of that.
It's very positive. Listeners, thanks for joining us and have a wonderful week.